Hi, my name is Caroline Nagy, and I'm a musician and writer based in Austin, Texas. I am the author of Texas Jailhouse Music, a Prison Band History.
Crossing a on my way back home again. Crossing a on my way back home again. Well, I reckon I'm dead.
Caroline, I know that you've done all kinds of research very similar to this throughout the years, and you've spoken at many different conferences about your discoveries. What is the inspiration behind putting this book together? What got you going to find out more?
Well, as you know, I'm a musician. I do old music from the 50s, sometimes the 40s, 60s. So I was really interested in mid-century country music, for one thing. The first thing that really grabbed my attention were photographs of this band from the Texas State Prison in the unit of Goree, which is actually, it's still in a use, but it's male. It originated as a female-only unit. And so this band is called the Goree All-Girl String Band. And they were, six, eight. It varied. Young women who were in there for multiple crimes. But oh my gosh, the dimples, the curled hair, the little cowboy hats, and they had these really cool like rider boots on, and they're all with their cool like pre-war Gibson guitars. And I'm just like, what is that one in for? What is that one in for? Who are these women? And with my knowledge of Western swing and all-female swing bands from that era, I was curious, too, were they one of the real first ones, the, like, first largest ones? Were they one of the longest-running ones? I just didn't know for sure. So I wanted to know more about them. And then the jumpstart for that was really Skip Hollandsworth. He's a very popular Texas author who recently had a book come out, The Midnight Assassin, about Austin's first serial killer, which is actually also one of the United States' first serial killers documented. Skip wrote an article in 2003, Texas Monthly, called Oh Sister, Where Art Thou? And that really got the ball rolling. And in fact, his article was a huge hit. Jennifer Aniston actually optioned a movie off of it, her and her partner, Kristen Hahn. And a lot of interest was generated in that. But what I decided to do is delve a little further into that by using the transcripts over at the Texas Center for American History, the Dolph Briscoe Center.
Rabies, get up in the hollow. Rabies, got them out of heaven. Going to my garden, eating them a cabin.
I asked to see the Texas Prison Echo, and I asked for the earlier issues of that, and that's when I started to, I just fell pell-mell down into this spiral of research, finding out about these women, and then there were so many men, and they had all these pictures that of them with their instruments, and it was a lot of information about the Texas Prison Rodeo, which was largely involved in these bands, as well as one of the most amazing and unique parts of Texas history is a radio show that aired from the Texas Prison Museum called 30 Minutes Behind the Walls. This is not the only radio show like that that had ever occurred, but it was one of the first, especially on a weekly basis. And it spawned dozens of others in other prison systems, including a show called, I think, San Quentin on the Air, which aired in the early 40s from San Quentin. As we know, San Quentin was made, you know, popular culturally by Johnny Cash, who, in coming full circle, was interested in playing in prisons and recording an album live in prison from playing the Huntsville Prison Rodeo in 1957. He started thinking about it, and then he decided to get an idea in his head to do it. He approached his label about it, and they took about 8 years to come around to it. But Folsom Prison and San Quentin happened shortly after that. So in the 60s, that was how we know about it. And one of the reasons why we know about, why we associate prisons with country music.
San Quentin, you've been living hell to me. You called at me since 1963. I've seen them come and go and I've seen them die. And long ago I stopped asking why. San Quentin, I hate every inch of you. You've cut me and you've scarred me through and through. And I'll walk out a wiser, weaker man. Mr. Congressman, why can't you understand?
There's a lot of insight here into the talent of these individuals and their performances. Would they have had a different life had it not been for being in prison?
Two sides to that. Well, the first side is that many of the prisoners didn't play music before they went in. And at the same time, there are very, very few recordings. In fact, that is one of the overarching great mysteries of this entire project. I am looking for recordings of the Gory All-Girl String Band or the Rhythmic Stringsters, which was their male counterparts. We have quite a lot of prison recordings from the Lomaxes, John Lomax, etc., but they don't touch on the non-African-American populations because he had a mission to find African-American folk music, and people who went into the prisons after him, they followed suit. So that was sort of resulted in an unfortunate dearth. But as far as the talent goes, there were also several inmates that were notably talented before they went in. That's what I wrote in Chapter 5, Cowboys, Songsters, and Fiddlers, where I'm talking about one gentleman who was a trumpet player in the jazz field. He played with the Dorsey Brothers and Hal Kemp and some other notables, but he never went that far. He was not really able to because he had a lot of issues, which ultimately landed him in the prison. So I talk about his story and how the structure of prison life really helped him accommodate his talent and harness his talent for the better. He was one of the few people who I believe truly benefited from the Texas prison system and all the rehabilitative aspects that you could even draw from such a terrifying and brutal experience. And then there was a champion fiddler that I talk about named Lewis Lefty Franklin, another mystery to a lot of people who follow old Texas time fiddling. He was a champion fiddler and played with Eck Robertson, who was one of the first country music fiddlers to exist. And to really start doing country music and marketing it as country music. He was a regular counterpart of his until he committed a murder, seemingly in cold blood, although it looked like it was more heat of passion, but he shot his landlady pretty much just dead, and he ended up serving his time. And that's one of the most amazing stories. So there are a lot of people who are already talented who went into the prison system. And then there are people whose talent developed as a way of being as part of the project.
Oh, Bobby cried, poor thing she moaned. Oh, what whooping and hollering. I know you're sick, you're very pale. Young man, you're slowly dying. Go bring me back my pony here. I'll send away my servant. Go bring my love here this day and let her gaze upon me.
I have a feeling that this is only the beginning. This book is just the beginning. This is subject matter that is not really given a lot of attention.
No. In fact, to my knowledge, this is the first book of its kind about, not that it hasn't been written about before, but it's the first book of its kind about prison bands in any state, which is actually interesting because most states, Southern and otherwise, have a rich history of prison bands, of inmate-formed bands that existed, that still exist in many states. I wouldn't say in Texas, but in many other states, they do exist. this is a history that I think really needs researching. If I'm doing it, if someone else is doing it, what I really want to do is start a conversation and sort of uncover this hidden history of United States culture. And it's a very fascinating culture because we're talking about the prison culture versus or in tandem with the music culture, which is just a fascinating topic. So, yeah, I think it is just the beginning. I have done a lot of research on other states as well, and I'm starting into it. I've thought about doing some more for regional histories, perhaps. I don't know. I'd have to spend a lot of time, I think, in these other states to really delve into their archives, because you have to kind of be there. And that's why it was so easy for me living in the capital of Texas. And then occasionally I'd take a road trip to Huntsville, which is where the prison museum, Texas Prison Museum, is. And they are an enormous resource for prison culture of decades past and recent decades in Texas. So they provided the lion's share of the photographs for the book. They're very helpful.
Gotta come on the river in 1904. You could find a dead man Everton Road. Oh, but it ain't a volcano on his brazen. Yeah, there they done grind it all in molasses.
There's a gravitas to this project as well. You know, it's a touchy subject. Somebody doesn't want to necessarily admit that their mother was in prison or their father was on death row. Fortunately, I have had success in locating relatives of a couple of people who are willing to talk about it. A couple of the inmates, I really get to share their stories in the book because their offspring, their descendants were willing to discuss the ramifications and their lives. So I got to find out what happened to them after prison or what, you know, because I don't get a lot of that. For the majority of the women in the Texas prison system, they were subjected to involuntary sterilization upon entry. This is not necessarily, it's not an accusatory thing. It was never an official thing, but just most sources acknowledge that, and it's borne out in the research that I've done of these inmates, especially the women looking for offspring. And the fact is, only one had a child after she left prison. And I found one of the women that I researched that had one before prison. But other than that, there's nothing. There's the trail goes cold. So there's another great mystery. I'm hoping that maybe some of these ladies have relatives out there who might be willing to share about their lives. I mean, this is a project that, yes, I wrote a book about it, but there's so much more to discover. And I personally would like to humanize rather than sensationalize, although I do try and capture all aspects of what they might have done to get in the prison. I want to know what the music meant to them. I want to know how the prison system treated them. And I want to know how they felt after they got out, what their story is. And I think that even prisoners today, of course, are going through that. And although the system has depersonalized the experience quite a bit, which depersonalization of one's identity is a really difficult thing, I think, for a lot of people. Perhaps that's almost the ultimate punishment for many of these inmates. You're not a name. You're just a number. And if there's anything I want people to take away from the book, I think it's that music has such a potential for rehabilitation in people. It really helps them find themselves next to water, food, shelter. Music is the stuff of life. And if you're living in a world where you feel dead inside, I think that music has enormous potential to make you learn of your own accomplishments and of the own power that lies within you. And I think that this book is trying to sort of highlight that a little bit.
I've been speaking with musician and author Caroline Nagy. Her book is called Texas Jailhouse Music, A Prison Band History. Caroline, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
I am very excited about this book. I am totally geeking out about this book.
I'm glad. I'm so glad.
Always sinning, always winning, any game you think's worthwhile. It's got me worried, I'm so discouraged, driving me wild, baby, with your style. Try to talk to you, laughing in my face, what good does it do me? Another's took my place. Always keep, always beat, any game you think's worthwhile. Now you're not trying, you're just lying, driving me wild, baby, with your style. Driving me wild.